Okay, I'm K2 Romeo India Whiskey. As we do every Sunday for the last 35, 36 years, we start the TechNet, which runs from 8 until roughly midnight, if there's enough enthusiasm to go that long. Main purpose of the technical net is education. Curious radio amateurs gather here and literally teach each other wireless technology. There are 25 or 26 different kinds of ham radio. 2-meter FM repeater ham radio is just one of the 26 kinds. So there's a lot to be discussed there. The books do a mediocre job. The classes do an even less than mediocre job of explaining how radio propagation really works. How does an antenna really work? What's going on inside of the driven element of a Yagi? What's happening to the rest of the Yagi and so on? And what's really going on with moon bounce, meteor scatter, forward propagated tropospheric scatter, VHF, UHF, HF, microwave, millimeter wave, audio, sideband, Morse code, digital. It just goes on and on. There's loads and loads of things that are called ham radio. So if for any reason you're displeased with your particular exposure to ham radio, let me drop. Before you give up the hobby, try one of the other 25 kinds. Arguably, it's one of the most educational hobbies there is. It can also give you an awful lot of pleasure of being able to talk to people who have a very similar obsession, is one way of putting it. So we all come together because we got this obsession, trying to understand how radio really works. One of the complaints I hear once every couple of months is somebody will get on some repeater somewhere and say that the stuff they discuss on the technical net, I don't know what the hell they're talking about. Okay, I can sort of understand that. If you haven't been exposed to what is impedance, reactance, susceptance, persistence, all of these terms, if you know what I mean, slow wave structures, and directivity, gain, impedance, front-to-back ratio, standing wave ratio, all of these terms, the first time you hear them, they will set you off, so to speak. In other words, whenever you're learning brand new material, you're always going to feel uncomfortable. So that's natural. If you feel uncomfortable because you're hearing things you don't understand, you're in good company. Just sit and listen for a while, and some of it will eventually make sense. For people who have learned a foreign language by doing nothing but just listening to people talking that foreign language. All right. Ham radio in the beginning is a foreign language. Just sit and listen to people discussing it. Get on and ask some questions. And when it comes to the questions you ask, let me drop. On the TechNet, there is no such thing as a dumb question. From my point of view, a dumb question means that there's a big gap. There's a large gap between what the guy knows and what he wants to know. He's not even able to properly express the question. That's the guy most deserving of an answer, because he needs the most amount of help to find out what's going on. So don't worry about asking a dumb question. There is no such thing as a dumb question. And there are lots of people who are a net control operator, and they say, this is a controlled net. All communication will take place through the control. We don't have that kind of exactness. Periodically, people pile on top of each other, yes. That did happen last week, for instance, and somebody got left out for an awful long period of time. George got left out for an awful long period of time. But KD2FIU, we apologize to him. And hopefully he'll come back and give us some more questions. We got pretty deep into the subject of what goes on when a ping-pong ball hits a paddle, depending on what the paddle is made out of. Is it a function of mass, density, and so on, coefficient of restitution? What's really going on in that ping-pong ball situation? Okay. The way the TechNet works, we break it up very loosely into three sections. Let me drop. The very first section, people sign in with giving us their call letters and name because they do have a question or a comment, and we take those in order for the first hour or so, depending on how many questions and how much enthusiasm. The next section is followed by Dr. Roy, AC2GS, who gives us what we call the science and physics report. And then that's followed by Paul, WS2N, who gives us the space report. because of the InSight launch, a very exotic spacecraft that got launched yesterday. He's going to have a lot to tell us about what InSight's going to do. It's the 21st or 22nd spacecraft that's going to go to Mars. And this one's going to land on Mars, dig a hole in Mars 16 feet down, and plant a probe. Listen for seismology and measure temperature and do weather, all kinds of things on Mars that have never been done before. So let's hope that that spacecraft, which is in transit right now, on its way to Mars, it'll take 6 months to get there. So next October, November or so, when it tries to land, what do they call it now? Insertion and landing, a very dangerous procedure. And if it succeeds, this could be a real fun spacecraft with the kind of data it's going to give us about the past life of Mars and what's going on inside the planet. Up till now, we've had very little evidence about the inside of Mars. Let me drop.
That's EDL, Dick.
Encounter, descent, and landing. Is that what the EDL stands for, Paul?
Entry, descent, and landing. That's what it is. I just wanted to also check my audio. Doing some remodeling, and I changed everything, unplugged everything, plugged things back in. So how's my signal tonight, Dick?
Signal is good. Audio is good. Let me drop. So, entry, descent, and landing, the most dangerous part of the mission. This is a 0.8 or 0.9 billion-dollar mission. I think the Lockheed Martin, I think, is the prime contractor, but it's supported by a number of nations, as many of these spacecraft are. Okay, one of the things that happened this week is that Roy got a letter from Dave, WA2SVM. So we're going to write down Dave's call letters. WA2SVM is going to be asking a question about Yagi antennas, a darn good question. Now, other people who do have a question or comment for the net, please give me your call letters and name right now. Try to wait for the four beeps in between each announcement. K2RIW, TechNet, we're listening.
And so we owe Dick with a question.
Okay, we got Rich. Anyone else? Wait for the beeps.
Delta 2, India Bravo, Papa, question.
No question, just listening.
Okay, somebody squeezed the mic so fast that all we heard was Delta, India, Papa. Give me the prefix and your name, sir. Delta, India, Papa.
Dick, KD2IBT, question.
Okay, KD2, you said IDP, India, Delta, Papa. Okay. And your name, sir?
Yeah, Bravo, Bravo, Papa. And the name is Ray, Lake Grove.
India, Bravo, Bravo, Papa. That doesn't make sense. Please give me your full set of call letters, Gabe.
Ray, Kilo, KD2, IBB.
Kilo, Delta 2, India, Bravo, Bravo. Okay, we got you, Ray. All right, so far we've got Dave, Rich, and Ray. Anyone else to sign in? Please give me your call letters and name right now. K2RIW.
KD2PPF with a question, please.
Oscar. Name is Mike. Mike, India, Kilo, Echo.
Okay, that was a double. At first we heard Kilo, Delta 2. Sounded like Papa, Papa, Foxtrot. Correct me on that, and please tell me your name, sir.
That is correct. Kilo Delta 2, Papa, Papa, Foxtrot. The name is Matt with a quick question. Thank you.
Okay, we got you, Matt. That was followed by blank, 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 Oscar, and the man's name was Mike. Mike, please give me your full set of call letters.
A-D-2-O-Q-O.
Okay, it sounds like Kilo Delta 2, Oscar, Quebec Oscar. Is that true? Mike, each time you transmit, you speak first, then squeeze the mic, and we don't hear very much. Squeeze the mic, wait for a second, and please give me a reply. KD2 Oscar, Quebec Oscar. Do I have it correct, Mike? Go ahead.
Dick, hang on a second. 375 just failed.
Okay. I'm hearing 375 right now. I'm hearing my voice coming out of 375, is that Eric?
Alright, I was listening to 375. The guy's call was KB2 OQO, and I didn't hear it coming out of 85.
Was that Kilo Bravo number 2, Eric? Go ahead.
I'm not sure. It was either Kilo Bravo or Kilo Delta.
Okay, Mike, why don't you correct us? Is your prefix Kilo Delta or Kilo Bravo? You got it, Mike.
Oh, Delta.
Once again, we only hear the tail end of your communication. Please squeeze the mic, wait a second or two, and then give us the reply. Is your prefix Kilo Bravo or Kilo Delta? Back to you, Mike.
Kilo Delta.
Got you that time. Thank you. Okay. Anyone else to check in with a question or a comment? Give me your call letters and name right now. K2RIW listening. Okay, we have more than enough to get started. I wonder if Dave is with us already. Whiskey Alpha 2 Sierra Victor Mike. Are you there, Dave? K2RIW.
This is Whiskey Alpha 2 Sierra Victor Mike. I just want to check if I'm making the machine or not. Back to you.
You're making the machine beautifully. Wait for the beeps and proceed with your question or comment or whatever you'd like, Dave. From Glen Ridge, New Jersey. You're coming in quite well.
Oh, thanks much. The leaves are on the trees now, so I'm not sure how bad the signal's going to get, but thank you. The question tonight is about a DTV receive antenna, an outdoor type. I forwarded a picture of it to Roy, and hopefully he was able to forward that to you so you can kind of see what it is, but I'll describe it for everybody. It has a main boom on it that looks like it has Yagi elements. It has angled corner reflectors on the rear of the antenna. Looks like it's got a folded dipole type thing for the driven element. And in front of that folded dipole, on the main boom, towards the front of the antenna, there's two little other mini booms that are, one's angled up, it's above the main boom, and one's below it, and one's angled, the top one's angled up, the other one's angled down. And I see these on Amazon, MCM Electronics has them, and Solid Signal sells them, and I never paid any attention to them because they look kind of hokey, it's like it wasn't real, anything real, but I saw one mounted on a picture on a TV station as an off-air type antenna once, so I thought it was kind of odd, so I figured this would be a good question to see if this is a bogus antenna or if there's any science behind it. Back to you.
AC2GS?
Go right ahead, Roy.
Okay, for anyone who wants to follow along, I have an image posted at the very top of my bookmark page. Just type in your browser, roy.ac2gs.com, and the image of the antenna will pop into your screen.
Very well done, Roy. That's a very nice website you've got with some good information. So, therefore, anybody who wants to can go to Roy's website. Give us the address of that website again, Roy. I think it's roy.ac2gs.com. Do I have it correct? Go ahead.
Absolutely. That's a page that I set up so that people can keep a list of the links that I mention as I talk, and I included the picture at the very top of the page. You don't even have to scroll down to it.
Very well done. Couldn't make it any simpler for people to follow along. read along with Dave and Dick and Roy. Okay. Dave's implied question, is this antenna a hoax? Is it real? Is it just something where people have added doodads to an antenna in order to sell it, but they're not really functional? In my opinion, Dave, that is a real antenna. For approximately 5 to 10 years, Europe has been using over-the-air television receiving antennas that have directors in front of the driven element, 2 or 3 rows of directors, where one row of directors is above the boom, another row of directors is below the boom, and one row of directors is right on the boom, so to speak. So multiple rows of directors, a whole sea, a whole cloud of directors in front of the driven element. is a relatively popular antenna in Europe. I found that out because my good antenna expert buddy, Kent, Whiskey Alpha 5 Victor Juliet Bravo. If you go to that website, Whiskey Alpha 5 Victor Juliet Bravo.com, you'll see Kent's website where he sells green colored printed circuit VHF, UHF antennas. And on his additional pages of his website, he also will show you how to build very high performance 2-meter Yagis and 432 megacycle Yagis out of coat hanger wire and strips of wood. So very inexpensive, very high performance antennas can be home brewed by Kent's second or third page of his website once you go there. He's a very good antenna person. He's got a backyard antenna range where he makes lots of measurements on commercial antennas as well as amateur.
Repeater, time out.
That website.
Let's see if we've still, looks like I didn't time out, 375. Paul, did you say the bad website? Give me that again now. If it was that WS2N, go ahead, Paul.
No, that was somebody else.
Hey, the person who said bad website, what are you talking about?
No, I said, can you please give me Ken's website again?
Roger, Dodger. Ken's website is Whiskey Alpha 5, Victor Juliet Bravo. .com, WA5VJB.com, Kent, Britain, in Grand Prairie, Texas, sells these very inexpensive green printed circuit antennas, lots of them for VHF, UHF frequencies, and he's got multiple pages of his website as to how to homebrew 2-meter and 220 and 432 megacycle Yagis out of coat hanger wire, rather high performance. When it comes to the Central States VHF Society, he's the man who runs the antenna gain competition measurement almost every year for the last 15 years. He's also heavily involved in Europe. He's a member of the Radio Society of Great Britain, VHF, UHF get-togethers, and so on. And so he goes to the meetings in Britain and Germany almost every year, as well as being a big man on campus with reference to Central States VHF Society, and also the microwave update. Let me drop.
Can you repeat that slower again? I'm sorry.
Okay, I'm going to give you Kent Britton's website again. It's his call letters, .com. His call letters are Whiskey Alpha 5, Victor Juliet Bravo, .com. WA5EJB.com. That website, he sells these inexpensive antennas. On his second, third, or fourth page of that website, when you get there, he'll show you how to build very inexpensive, very high-performance coat hanger Yagi antennas. But what Kent did do on one of his trips to the RSGB meeting or the German meeting in Europe, he was at a commercial...
Repeater, time out.
During one of his meetings in Europe, he was at a commercial electronic show where he saw some of these antennas being sold that are being used for over-the-air television reception in Europe, where there are directors above and below the boom. Kent mailed me two of those pictures that he took in Europe, and I have sent those to Roy, and so Roy has the ability to also show you those additional European antennas, similar to the one that Dave is describing to us. That's also on Roy's website. Let me drop. So the Yagis we've seen for years and years have got directors that are on the boom. And the next question would be, why in the world would you want to put any directors above the balloon or below the boom? And do they really work? And the answer, if it's done yes, done correctly, the answer is absolutely yes. That's not a hoax. That's a working antenna. Once you understand how a Yagi works, and I'm going to give you that information right now, you'll understand the additional benefit of those extra directors that are off the boom. Let me drop. How does a Yagi work? First of all, I'm going to explain to you what is a slow wave structure. You know that if you used plastic as the insulating material inside of your coaxial cable, the velocity factor you get for coaxial cable is a function of 1 over square root of the dielectric constant of the dielectric material. So you take the dielectric material, take the square root of it, take that 1 over, that is your velocity factor. As an example, if I was using plastic as my dielectric in my 50-ohm coax cable, I'm using dielectric that has a dielectric constant of 4, square root of 4 is 2, 1 over the square root would be 0.5. 1 over 2 is 0.5. Your velocity factor of coaxial cable with dielectric constant of 4 is 50%. In other words, the wave goes down that coaxial cable half the speed of light because of the dielectric material you've used. By the same token, if your coaxial cable has an insulating material between semiconductor and shield that's air and very little other plastic supporting that semiconductor, your velocity factor of air has a dielectric constant very close to unity. Therefore, your velocity factor would be very close to the speed of light. Andrew Heliax, for instance, I think has got a velocity factor of 92%. RG213, I think, has got a velocity factor of 66%. Teflon semi-rigid cable, I think, has got a velocity factor of 70%, and so on. So 1 over the square root. Now you know what slow wave structure is, okay? A magnifying glass. Everyone thinks that a magnifying glass will focus the sun down to a point for you because of its index of refraction. Let me drop. Index refraction, in other words, the way the wave gets bent as it enters the glass of your magnifying glass, because of the shape of the glass in that area, bends the wave and gives you a focal point. That's one way of explaining it. In my opinion, it's not the best way to explain it. That planar wave hitting your magnifying glass coming from the sun, assuming that you're looking at the phase front of wave number 45, so to speak. It's a planar wave hitting your magnifying glass, and the magnifying glass is made out of glass, which has got a dielectric constant where the wave, whether it be light or radio wave, travels through the glass more slowly than it does through air. The magnifying glass is thicker in the center than it is out at the perimeter. Therefore, the wave gets more delayed in the center. The portion of the wave that goes to the center of the magnifying glass gets more delayed than the portion that goes through the perimeter of the magnifying glass. Therefore, the wave that started off as a planar wave entering your magnifying glass, after it's been through the magnifying glass, the wave is now delayed in a characteristic way, so that the wavefront is no longer flat. It's now concave in the direction toward the driven element, so to speak, toward the focal point. Because that wave front has been converted by the slow wave structure of the glass into a concave-shaped wave, and the wave always propagates perpendicular to the local wave front. So now you see how the concave wave gives you a focusing effect, and therefore your sun can easily be going through the magnifying glass, brought down to a point where you could burn a hole in a piece of newspaper, so to speak. Let me drop. You could, if you want to, make a radio antenna with a magnifying glass. If you do that, Mr. Koch, K-O-C-H is the man's name, way back in 1940, did that. He took a great big chunk of foam, and he buried the washers in the foam, where he had a higher density of washers near the center and a less density near the outer edge. And the washers acted as small capacitors in free space and slowed down the wave and gave him a magnifying glass. Or you could take some kind of foam that really has a significant dielectric constant and literally cut it into the shape of a very large magnifying glass. You could, if you want to, make a lens in front of a dipole antenna on 2 meters, 432 or 1296, and you would get that focusing effect. It would work like a charm. The problem is, it's a great big chunk of foam. It gives you a lot of wind resistance and a lot of weight and probably an awful lot of cost. So very rarely do we build antennas that way. But you could, and you would get equal function if you did it. Let me drop. Now, those directors in front of your Yagi are a skeleton effect. They are a poor man's equivalent of a magnifying glass. Each of those directors are shorter than a full half wavelength electronically. You take any dipole-like antenna. If you make it electronically exactly a half wavelength long, it'll give you a center impedance of roughly 73 ohms, and it'll give you a beautiful resonance at the frequency where it's electronically a half wavelength long. Make the dipole shorter than half wavelength electronically, and you'll get a capacitive reactance. When you put your antenna tuner on that antenna and measure its impedance. If it's shorter, it'll be a capacitor. If it's longer, it'll be an inductor. Let's go to the shorter. Make the dipole shorter than half wavelength. It now gives you a capacitor reactance. In the case of the coax cable, when you put dielectric constant of 4 plastic material for the dielectric material of your coax cable, it slowed down the wave. The extra dielectric material, what dielectric constant really means is the capacitance multiplication. Let me drop. I could take two flat sheets of metal, put them a quarter of an inch spacing from each other. Each flat sheet is, let me pick a number, 4 inches square. I put them a quarter of an inch away from each other, connect a wire to each one of those, and by the area of those two plates and the spacing between them, I go to the formula 1/2 0.225 A over T. A is area, T is thickness, expressed in meters, and your answer is in picofarads. 0.225 A over T, area, and T is the spacing between the two plates. That predicts for you the amount of capacitance you'll get for an air capacitor, where you know the area and the spacing. Slip a piece of plastic material in that quarter-inch air spacing, which has got a dielectric constant of 4. By definition, the capacitance will be 4 times higher. So dielectric material adds extra capacitance. How much is a function of its dielectric constant. So the wave gets slowed down in your coax cable because you put a piece of plastic between the center conductor and the outer shield. You could, if you want to, start off with air coax cable and put, let me pick a number, 2 picofarad capacitors between center conductor and shield, and put one of those capacitors every half inch down the cable. Now you're making a lumped equivalent of adding capacitance as if you were doing it with the plastic material. Again, you're creating a slow wave structure. That series of capacitors between the center conductor and the shield of this crazy coax cable I just described, I could, if I did it correctly, I could make the velocity factor of that 0.5, 0.6, if you know what I mean. Whereas if there was nothing but air supporting the center conductor of that coax, the velocity factor would be very close to unity. Let me drop. So when you put directors in front of a Yagi on the boom, and each of the directors is a dipole-like structure shorter than half wavelength, it has a capacitive reactance. You distribute capacitance along anything where radio wave is propagating, and the wave will propagate more slowly. So therefore, the portion of the RF energy going down the center of your Yagi close to the boom gets slowed down more than the wave that's 6 inches above the boom, so to speak, because it's further away from those directors. If you have the right distribution of directors, each one the right spacing and each one the right length, you will peak up the gain of the Yagi at your favorite frequency. So that's the director string in front of your Yagi is a poor man's equivalent of a magnifying glass. Let me drop. And if you make each of those directors the right length and the right spacing, it does an extremely good job. When it comes to the amount of gain you get per pound of metal, per square foot of wind loading, per dollar of materials, it is very difficult at VHF, HF, VHF, and UHF frequencies to beat the performance of a well-tuned Yagi. Gives you a hell of a lot of performance for the dollar, the wind load, the pounds, and so on. Very high performance because of this phenomenon. Now, if you now have a second set of directors above the boom and another set of directors below the boom, it gives you more of the tuning characteristic capability of the slow wave structure. You're coming closer to synthesizing the full three-dimensional magnifying glass, if you know what I mean. So this is the beginning of the story. I wonder if what you've heard so far is starting to make some sense, Dave. That is a real antenna. Now, because it's a television aerial, let me give you one caveat here.
Sure, Jack.
Go ahead, Eric.
Two things. You're really talking about a lot of periodic for a TV antenna. And what's the website that Roy has a picture on?
Go to Roy, R-O-Y, dot AC2GS, Alpha Charlie 2 Golf Sierra, .com. So Roy dot AC2GS dot com. QSL, over to you, Eric.
Yes, sir.
Okay, I am not talking about a periodic. I'm talking about a Yagi. The antenna you're about to see is a Yagi antenna. It is not a log periodic. Yes, there are kinds of log periodics, which also has zigzag pieces of metal and dipoles and whatever above the boom and below the boom. There are log periodics that use this function, but the antenna we're talking about right now is a real Yagi antenna. But the caveat I'm going to tell you about a television aerial, let me drop, is that the designer of a television aerial, he can choose his favorite frequency. At his favorite frequency, he can make all of the lengths of all of the directors and all the spacing of all the directors just right to favor the maximum gain, maximum directivity, most beautiful antenna pattern at that frequency. But television aerials cover an octave or so. I mean, in the old days, television started at channel 2, 54 megacycles. And in the old, old days, went up to channel 83 at 870 megahertz. That's a lot of octaves. You try to design a single antenna to cover that much frequency range. Now, how do you tune that director string? Well, no matter how you tune it, it's a compromise. You take any commercially made television aerial and scan it between the lowest frequency and the highest frequency on a good antenna range and really measure the gain. You'll get a very bumpy-looking curve. Hopefully, they've favored some of the elements at the low end of the band, some of the elements in the middle of the band, some of the elements at the top end of the band. So the gain doesn't go to zero anywhere, so to speak. 0 decibels, by the way, is a usable amount of gain, because that's unity in gain. Decibels work that way. It's a logarithmic function. Let me drop. But almost any television aerial, the manufacturer will maybe tell you it's got 12 dB of gain. It's got 150-mile coverage. Yeah, maybe at one of those frequencies throughout that band, that might be true. Is it true at all of the frequencies? And he also tells you the antenna works between channel 14 and channel 31, so to speak, nowadays, for UHF reception. And between channel 2 and channel 13 when it comes to VHF reception. He may say those words because almost nobody buying a television aerial has the ability or the dollars and value or the access to the test equipment to really go and measure the gain. Almost nobody can confirm that. So they can claim anything they want. When it comes to the performance of a television aerial, the gain numbers and the price and the wind load and everything else, particularly the gain numbers and the front-to-back ratio, those numbers are set in the advertising department, not in the measurement laboratory. Because they know darn well that somebody's going to say, I want to buy a television aerial, and here's brand A, claims 12 dB of gain, and it's $100. Here's brand B, it claims 13 dB of gain, and it's only $105. And here's brand C, only has 9 dB of gain, but it's $50. And so the guy he's shopping, he's trying to get the biggest bang for the dollar. How many decibels of gain can he get for how many dollars spent? Many people buy a television aerial with that in mind. Are they really buying it so it'll have survivability of an ice storm and a windstorm and be strong enough to be able to survive birds sitting on it and so on? Let me drop. These are some of the more important criteria that are never even considered. So when it comes to the claim of gain of a television aerial, sometimes the manufacturer will say it's got this number of decibels of gain, and occasionally they'll give you a pattern. They'll give you an antenna pattern plot at one of those frequencies. And if you have any understanding of how an antenna works, you look at the 3 dB bandwidth, 3 dB beam width of the main lobe. That's a necessary but not sufficient condition to give you that gain. Just to give you an example, if your antenna is claiming to have 15 decibels of gain at 432, for instance, it's got to have a beam width of the main lobe of 24 degrees or less. If the main lobe is 60 degrees wide and they claim 15 decibels of gain, it's beyond the laws of physics. You'd have to set a new value of pi in order to make that happen, if you know what I mean. So occasionally they'll give you a gain claim, and they'll give you a pattern.
ACTIS, nothing heard on the Eastern repeater.
I'm hearing the Eastern repeater very well. Right now, 375 is transmitting like a charm. My voice is coming out of both places. So I don't quite agree with you, Bill. So what I'm getting at is they're defying the laws of physics right in their own advertisement. The person making the ad didn't understand antenna terminology. So are you starting to see what we're talking about here? My caveat is that be careful with believing the numbers that a manufacturer claims for an antenna. but a well-designed antenna, nowadays with modern techniques, quite often, particularly in Europe, and now United States is catching on 10 years later, is starting to use over-the-air VHF, UHF antennas with some of the directors off the boom, and it's not just a hokum. Owed you for fills on this, Dave. I wonder if any of this makes starting to make some sense.
Repeater, timeout.
Sorry, I timed it out. WA2, Sierra Victor Mike. You've got it, Dave. K2RIW. Ask any further questions on this subject that you want to. I really appreciate the answer on it. I sort of digest a little bit of what you said. The only thing that's just physically looking at it, the fact that the upper and lower directors are angled, you know, outwards, to me, in my mind, just instinct would say, oh, it might be picking up more multipath than just having a center boom. And what we're used to seeing, like stacked Yagis, where they're where the elements are, the booms are parallel to each other. And so I'm not, wasn't really sure how that might have, you know, affect, like, for DTV type things for multipath. But like you say, if it's just focusing from a main lobe, one main lobe, then maybe that's it. So I'll have to see if I can find more details about it, study up more. Thanks so much.
Hold on, Dave. There's quite a bit more to this. In the case of an antenna that I'm familiar with, the so-called 19-element insulated Yagi for 432, the so-called RIW-19 antenna, invented in 1977 in my backyard on a ratiometry antenna range. And what's a ratiometry antenna range? You can read about that in QST magazine. Let's see, Antenna Ratiometry, an Outdoor Range Improvement Technique is the name of the article in QST. And what year was that? I think it was 1975. Anyhow, go to the archives of QST magazine and you look up K2RIW, you'll find that article. And you'll see the picture of how you set up a backyard antenna range where you can resolve antenna improvement while you're tuning a Yagi. If you can resolve the antenna gain going up and down every 20th of a dB, 0.05 dB, you know when you're walking in the right direction, if you know what I mean. It's like a blind man walking up a hill. The tilt of his feet tells him which way is uphill. And if your antenna range has got high resolution of gain as you're making each element of a Yagi longer or shorter, or moving the element further forward or further back, and you're peaking the gain, with a ratiometry antenna range, you now can do a super gain performance improvement. Let me drop. So that antenna that I'm familiar with, this 19-element Yagi on 432, 12.5-foot long boom, 19 elements on it altogether. Each of the elements are approximately 12 inches long. Half wavelength on 432 is very close to 12 inches. So driven element and all those directors and reflectors, they're in the vicinity of 12 inches long. A little bit shorter, a little bit longer, depending on whether it's a reflector or a director. But they're all in that category. And the boom is 12.5 foot long. Because an antenna has 15.5 decibels of gain over a dipole, and it's quite often used in antenna gain competitions as a standard gain antenna on 432. Quite often, antenna gain competitions over the last 15 or 20 years have done that. In order to have that amount of gain, it is capturing RF energy coming into it when you're receiving from a 5.5 foot diameter of space. If your eyes operated at 432 and you saw that wave coming into the antenna, take a chunk of that wave, 5.5 feet in diameter, that portion of the wave that's going down the boom of the antenna, hits that director string, and all of that energy gets folded down to the driven element as if you were using a magnifying glass to do it. All that energy gets focused down to the driven element, which peaks it up, picks it up, and sends it down the transmission line. So it's got a 5.5 foot diameter effective capture area, even though the elements are only 12 inches long. As you can see, that focusing action in free space, even beyond the place where the directors are located, that's part of the magic of Huygens principle, when it comes to Yagi antenna and focusing RF energy. Let me drop. So if your eyes could see that concave wave being created in the middle of that boom of that Yagi, the planar wave coming into the Yagi gets converted to a concave-shaped wave that gets focused down to the driven element. So energy from various directors and various slightly off the Bohr site direction in space, the energy is being focused down to the driven element. Those directors on those auxiliary booms that you're describing on this exotic antenna, the fact that they're off to one side, you think they're creating side lobes. Uh-oh. That's focusing your main lobe energy. Not to worry. And so if that antenna is well-tuned at its favorite frequency, now the problem is they've got a compromise problem going on here. A television aerial covers a great amount of spectrum, usually at least a 2-to-1 frequency region. So a Yagi, I can easily peak up a Yagi over, let me pick a number, 5 or 10% bandwidth. I can give you maximum performance over a 5 or 10% frequency bandwidth. But to try to cover it a 100% bandwidth, an octave, you can't do that. Let me drop. So a lot of compromise is going to take place. And again, if you take any television aerial, which is trying to cover approximately an octave, and you put it on a good, well-calibrated antenna range, and really measure the gain versus frequency, you'll get a very bumpy curve. Hopefully the gain is always above dipole at all of those frequencies, and hopefully some of those favorite frequencies, it's well above dipole in gain. But it's not going to have maximum gain everywhere across an octave. A Yagi can't do that. A log periodic can easily cover an octave or a decade in frequency. That's the good news. But a log periodic cannot have anywhere near as much gain as a well-tuned Yagi. A modern-day Yagi, I can give you 16 decibels of gain over a dipole. A well-tuned log periodic antenna covers a lot more frequency. Rarely do they go beyond 7 or 8 dB of gain. So you pay your money, you take your choice. So even though those booms go off in a crazy Yagi, a crazy angle, and it's making you think that the antenna is not a good design, that has the capability of being a good design, particularly if you look at those other pictures that are going to be on Roy's website, which I supplied to him, the European antennas that have been used for the last 10 years, which are using this principle for over-the-air television reception. Over to you, Dave, WA2SVM, K2LIW in the TechNet.
Again, thanks very much. It's sinking in a little bit, but I'll have to do a little more, try to find more information that I can read about it. Just have never seen anything like that in any of the ham antenna books or things like that, or seen them anywhere, just in work experience and things like that. But certainly intriguing. The way you explained it sounds interesting, and they're doing it in Europe more. And obviously, it looks like it's a UHF-only antenna, so may not be practical for receiving some of the stations here that are on a VHF, low band, high band VHF as well. But great, I really appreciate it, the explanation. So it wasn't a hoax, after all. And I have another Yagi question, maybe for next week or the week after, an easier one, I think. So thanks again, appreciate it. And to K2RAWWA2SDM listening.
Yeah, you've asked a darn good question, Dave. I'm glad you did. I know you have a second Yagi question. I'm going to go down the list of other people who have signed in. If we finish that list in a reasonable length of time, I might come back tonight for your second Yagi question. If not, I hope it'll wait until next week. The next person on the list with a question was Rich, N2EO. November 2, Echo Oscar. How's the electrons in Massapequa Park treating you tonight, Rich? You've got it, Rich. K2LIW.
Okay, Dick, this is N2EO. You know, I always look forward to Sunday night when you run the net. Two things. One short, one maybe a little longer. Jeremy, that's Patty's son. He's interested in a lot of things like multi-universe and, satellites. He's very well-read. He reads up a lot of things like on Elon Musk and SpaceX. He wanted to come down here next week and get on the net while I'm here. Is that permitted?
I think the answer is yes. You, as the licensed operator for that location with that transmitter, are allowed to put somebody on that microphone where you're controlling the emissions, and yes, a third party, so to speak. Yes, that's allowed. Do you believe he has a question that would be of general interest to the net? Over to you, Rich.
get on during the science part of the net. Like I said, he's interested in all the modern technology and future technology. Very well-read guy, and what is a good time for him to come down? He has a little boy up there. He can't come down tonight. He's with his boy.
Yeah, that's the part that's not predictable, Rich. Depending on enthusiasm of people asking questions and making comments of the first of the three sections of the net, the first section of the net could end as early as 8:45, and sometimes doesn't end until 10 o'clock. And then we begin the science and physics section. So the science and physics section could begin anything from 8:45 to 10 o'clock. And then it goes for some length of time. We're not super organized. And we play it by ear. We go with the flow, if you know what I mean. So on average, I could say that Roy is in full blast performance by 9:30 most of the time. So 9:30 would be a good time to hear Roy, is my best guess. Over to you, Rich.
Okay, Dick, I'll tell him to come down then. He would have come down tonight, but he's watching wrestling with his son. His boy is 7, and eventually I'd like to see the boy and Jeremy get licensed. The boy obviously is too young right now. But listen, Dick, the question was... Some of it belongs here, and some of it belongs on the computer net. So I'm asking on both. I got my laptop running on Linux, Ubuntu Linux, and I'm all set up with my slow scan TV program. I noticed when people send pictures, they'll first send a CQ with the call letters. When somebody comes back, they answer him on the fly. What I mean on the fly, they do something to put in call letters on like a cartoon or something, and they'll give him a signal for it, and they talk via video and type on the various cartoons. Now, how do they get the text in? On the fly, right away. That's what I wanted to know.
Okay, those you guys who have listened to me over the years know that I'm very light on computer knowledge. My son, Christopher, KB2IQN, has a hell of a lot of knowledge on Linux-like systems, but he's not available right now. So, can anybody answer Rich's question? If so, give me your call letters right now, K2RIW in the TechNet.
K2GS.
You got it, Roy.
Okay, slow scan television is, they modulate a signal to generate a still image. And you can have fixed still images, or you can generate type information onto a graphic, superimpose it like any painting program, but it can be inside the program, and then it sends the signal which includes the text. Now, the big program that I'm aware of is something called MMSTV. It's used both by itself and as a plug-in to other programs. I'm not quite sure which program Richard is using, but that's basically slow scan TV is showing postcards. And some postcards are amusing, some postcards are risque, and some postcards are rather run-of-the-mill. But it's curious. There aren't that many people out there doing it. I tried it for a week or two, and I seem to find the same 4 or 5 people sending a lot of images.
And to EO, go ahead if you need fills, Rich.
Okay, Dick. Well, I know what slow scan is. I'm reusing it. I have a program called MixW, MIXW. It comes from the Ukraine. It does all the digital modes. But if somebody answers me, how do I call them back? By typing in his call letters. I know how to save files image files pre-made up with my call and call CQ. But when someone answers me, how can I put his call in DE and 2BO? Thank
you. You got it, Royce.
It's primarily a function of the software. Again, I'm more familiar with MMSSTV, and I think there's an actual text field that you can type in a text. It superimposes it on the image file that you already loaded, and it sends both things. Worst comes to worst, you get a paint program, and you type a little fast, and you capture it, and you send it off. Usually it takes about 30 seconds to do something like that. But I think, again, that MMSSTV has that ability, that it has a text field that you can superimpose on the graphic. I'm not quite sure about the mixed W, because I really didn't use that.
You've got it, Rich.
Okay, Roy, what'd you say it is? M, Mike Dancy, SSTV?
It's Mike, SSTV.
Okay, I'll look for that one, maybe tonight. And by the way, fellas, I find Ubuntu Linux much easier to use than Microsoft 10, which I got rid of. I think in the days of XP, Windows 7, 8.1, they did a good job, but in my opinion, with this Windows 10, they really shot themselves in the foot. They got too much garbage in there that's unnecessary. I have a paint program that comes with Linux. It's called GIMP. G-I-M-P. Maybe we'll do what I want. Thank you.
Okay. You've run out of questions on this subject, Rich. Is that what you're saying?
No more. I'll have to go on the computer net, but I thought maybe there was somebody here that runs slow scan. Like Roy says, not used that much. The frequency basically is 14.230 or 14.233. Yesterday, when the band was open, I found a lot of pictures all day. So I have to disagree with Roy that there's not much activity.
Go ahead, Eric.
Richard's right. 14 through 40 is where a lot of guys transmit. But there's about a dozen and a half different modes of slow scan. Some update at really slow rates. Some of them are black and white. Some of them are color. Most of today's software knows what it's receiving. It waits for the sync. And then it figures out what it is and it puts it together. There's a lot of European slow scan activity. I don't see that much around here, so that's kind of it. And I just looked up what Ritzy uses, and it doesn't specify what mode it is. So it looks like they're doing Olivia, which is something that Europeans use a lot. I haven't seen, I'm looking through it now, I haven't seen a list of what it will decode, but there's a whole different bunch of them, so. Again, if this is a real smart software, it figures it out for you.
Okay, well, now the version, the types of slow scan, like you say, there are different ones. Most people settled on Scotty 1.
That's pretty common, Rich.
That's correct. If they need to get more picture quality, they go to Scotty 2. But they're getting some very nice pictures on Scotty 1. A little grain, but very, very usable.
No, the higher quality stuff takes longer, you're more susceptible to noise and little burst noise that's part of your image. The only thing I would suggest to you, when you transmit back to anybody, just be careful about how your audio level is going into the transmitter, because it's pretty easy to distort it. It requires the amplitude information to determine what's black and what's white.
Yes, I know. My interface is a Western, what do you call it? West Mountain Radio, Rick Blaster Advantage. It has gain controls for transmit and receive. When I set the transmit, I brought it up until the transmitter was full power, and then I stopped. No more.
Net tonight at 8 o'clock. Welcome to the W2VL repeater.
Okay, I'm going to go on to the next person, which was Ray. Kilo Delta 2, India, Bravo, Bravo. Go right ahead, Ray, with your question. K2RIW in the TechNet. My name is Dick. One more call. Kilo Delta 2, India, Bravo, Bravo. Are you still there, Ray? K2RIW. You're number one on the runway right now.
Hey, I'm the Dick. Can you ask Chris to come down next week?
Whether or not he's going to be available is unknown. I'll ask, but no guarantees. Okay, I'm going to go on to the next person. That was Matt. Kilo Alpha 2, Papa Papa Foxtrot. Go right ahead, Matt. K2RIW.
Hey, good evening, gentlemen. It might sound like a really stupid question, but I have a nice QRP, the A18J2. I'm wondering about the antennas for that. And I also have a Kenwood question about a QRP mode, or about the Mars Cap mode. But I'll start with the... My question is, I'm wondering if anyone has any information pertaining to the, the ATS-25 antenna for remote. Over.
Yeah, Matt, when you signed in earlier tonight, your signal was quite nice. Right now, it's very noisy, so you've made some kind of a change. You've steered the antenna, or you've moved the handy-talkie, or whatever. So I think you're looking for information about an ATS-25S antenna, if I understand correctly. Is that Alpha Tango Sierra 25 Sierra? That's the antenna you're asking about, Matt? KA2 Papa Papa Foxtrot, K2RIW. My name is Dick.
Yeah, Dick, it's the ATAS-25 antenna. I'll try to switch to a different radio.
Okay, you can stay there. So ATAS, Alpha Tango, Alpha Sierra, 25 antenna. I should know, are you saying that antenna is a Kenwood, or what's the brand name on that one, Matt?
I'm not sure what the brand on the antenna is. I heard it was a good QRP or a good remote antenna that you could set up on a tripod. I'm just wondering if anyone has actually used it.
So this is an antenna you're proposing to buy for a remote location or for a field day operation? Is that what you're asking? You're trying to find out, do people like or dislike the antenna? Is that your question, Matt? Go ahead, Matt.
Exactly the question. I want to know if I should spend the $225 to actually buy the antenna. I heard it was a pain in the ass to hook up. It looks like it's easy to hook up, but when you watch videos, it looks maybe a little hard to hook up. I'm just wondering if anyone's actually used it, because I am looking for a multi-band antenna for the 818 QRP Yaesu radio I have. Over.
And I should know, is this an HF antenna, or is this a... 40 meter to 10 meter antenna on HF, maybe 6 meters. Do you happen to know what frequency range it covers, Matt? Go ahead.
As far as I know, it's supposed to be the all band antenna. That's what they advertise it for, an all band antenna.
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
AC2GS?
Okay, let's hope that Roy has got some information on this. And like you, Matt, if I was going to lay down $225 for an antenna, a little bit pricey by my standards, I'd want to get a testimonial from somebody saying that, yeah, this is great and it's worth it. AC2GS, K2RIW. Let's see what we know about that one. You got it, Roy.
Unfortunately, I can't offer any hands-on with it, but I can tell you what shows up on EhamNet. It gets a rating of 4 out of 5, It's basically designed as a manual, tunable, shortened vertical with a bottom loading coil. And